further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant-at-Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. And the Sergeant will bring in the absent members. Today's chaplain is the Reverend Bob Gehrke from South Shore Trinity Lutheran Church in White Bear Lake. And after the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
O God, creator of the heavens and the earth, we thank you for this day and for the opportunity to meet in this place. You have blessed the state with a rich history. We have lived through years when there has been an abundance and years when there has been scarcity. Today we pray for those who have been adversely affected by the floods and by other challenges. We pray that you will watch over them and that their lives will improve. We ask you to raise a people who will help them face their challenges. We thank you for the senators who met in this chamber in the past as they sought not only to represent their constituents, but the good of all Minnesotans. May their same spirit guide these senators who have been elected to serve our state, for they have been given an important responsibility to lead and to govern. We ask that you would give them wisdom as they do so. Many years ago, a young king was given an opportunity to request anything he wanted. In response, he asked for a heart that would listen, a heart that would understand. As he tried to discern between good and evil, that he might rule in the best possible way. As these senators meet today, we pray that you will guide them as they speak. We ask that you would give them wise and discerning hearts as they listen to each other. May they have spirited debates, and as they do, may they always be seeking to understand the ones who offer ideas that differ from their own. This we ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic, one nation, under God, indivisible.
Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Berglund, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeKreif, Dibble, Fischbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingebretson, Jungbauer, Kielash, Koch, Cruz, Kubley, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Lori, Magnus, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Pogemiller, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vandeveer, Wieger, Wolf.
A quorum is present. Moving to the Senate agenda for the day, the fifth order of business, reports of committee, Senator Koch.
Madam President, I move the committee reports printed in the agenda now be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, nay. The motion is adopted. Moving to the seventh order of business, the second reading of House bills. There is one printed on page 2 of today's Senate agenda, second reading. The eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's bill's introduction, and they are referred as indicated, first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, there are three author's motions that will be taken as one motion. They are printed on page 2 of today's Senate agenda. On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Koch.
Madam President, pursuant to Rule 26, I would designate the following bills to be made a special order for immediate consideration. Senate File 1016, this is number 27 on your general orders, and Senate File 887, number 28 on general orders.
Gets to designate. Senator Koch has designated Senate File 1016, number 27 on special, number 27 on general orders as a special order. Senator Magnus.
Morning, Madam President.
Good morning, Senator Magnus.
Madam President, I move that the Senate do arise and consider.
Senator Magnus, your Senate File 1016 is on special orders.
Yes. Okay.
Just go ahead and explain the bill to us.
Okay, I'll explain the bill, Madam Chairman. Madam President and members, this is the Omnibus Agriculture and Rural Economies bill. Very good bill. We've had good discussions with the minority. Senator Kubley and I have been working, and his minority members have been working hard. Our majority members have worked hard. I spent a couple hours Friday afternoon with the Ag Commissioner and the governor's staff working to finalize the bill. I do have an amendment, Madam President, that I would like to offer to put the bill in a shape I would need it in to discuss here.
Senator Magnus, is that the A1 amendment?
Yes, yes, it is.
Secretary will report the A1 amendment.
Senator Magnus moves to amend Senate File 1016 as follows, page 3, line 18. This is the A1 amendment.
Senator Magnus on the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I'm taking on line 5 point, well, line 3.9, this is to handle the food inspector's retail handler's fee. We're taking the fee out. What I'm going to do later on is add that into the general fund and pay that out of the general fund. On line 5, or page 5, line 3, I'm deleting the amount that of the deficiency payments for ethanol, reducing that to from $15 million to $13.7 million. On line 5, or page 5, line 27, we're increasing the amount to the Next Generation Energy Board. Again, this is a board that looks at the next generation of biofuels for us. I would point out, members, that one of our plants will be the first commercial isobutanol plant in the world. So these are some of the efforts that we're working on with the Next Generation Energy Board. Senator Rosen, the chair of the Energy Committee, and I will be working putting that together. It's the it's a priority of the Department of Agriculture also. So I've increased that funding $500,000. On page 7, line 2, we're delete everything after the period and delete lines 3-7. That's just some language in here that's basically old language from before. That's already in the statutes. We don't need to reiterate it that. It was just giving priority to one segment, and we're not going to do that anymore. Page 7, line 21. This is the administration fee for the Department of Agriculture. We are fully funding the Department of Agriculture to the same level the governor has done with that amendment. And line 24, again, relates to that. Page 11, line 6, this deals with the Board of Animal Health. It's vital, we think, to support our livestock industry. It's interesting in Minnesota that about half of the agriculture receipts come from livestock, half of the total receipts come from grain. So we feel it's vitally important to protect our livestock industry to do that. We need to fund the Board of Animal Health to the full extent. So we're at the same level the governor has recommended in funding that. Page 11, lines 7 through 17, again, this is specialized language. We don't need that in there. The statutes cover this. So no point in reiterating that. Page 16, that's deleting the fees we had initially in there for the food handlers' fees, and that's by deleting that section, we'll do that. And page 20, that's deleting out the language for the ethanol payments. These are the payments that will be made the first year of the bill, Madam Chair, and so there'll be no more ethanol deficiency payments to continuing on after that. So that's basically the amendment, Madam President.
Discussion on the amendment. Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Magnus, the fees that you're taking out of the bill, you're backfilling with a general fund, and is it the general fund money, the producer payments, the ethanol producer payments that get paid out, and how much are you reducing the producer payments by?
Senator Magnus.
Madam President, Senator Bach, there's been some issues come up with the retail food handlers fee proposal. Senator Bonner, for example, Senator Hahn, and others have expressed some concerns we've had with an issue that if we would put a fee in and extend that so it goes on an ongoing fee, we're having some problems and issues we need to work out with some of the local entities. For an example, in that particular entity, Wayzata and Minnetonka were combining and doing their own retailer fee inspections. They have agreements with the Department of Agriculture to do that. The Department of Agriculture has declined to renew their inspection over there. We're negotiating some of that out. We just don't have the time to do that right now. And so instead of putting in a fee and extending this on, we're doing a one-time appropriation, basically, out of the general fund to do this and get a better handle on how we're going to work with the department and some of these local entities. The second question, the part of your question, Senator Bach, with the ethanol deficiency payments. The payments in the bill we're paying all out in 1 year. These are payments that have been delayed since 2003. These are funds that the ethanol plants have earned since 2003. This is just a catch up in the deficiency payments, and that amounts $13,732,000. And again, these are payments that have been delayed since 2003.
Senator Bach.
So, Madam President, Senator Magnus, the amount of the deficiency payments that we're reducing the bill by is how many dollars? Because, I mean, producers were expecting to get these. That's what the law was, and now we're reducing the payments to them. I just would like to know what the dollar amount is.
Senator Magnus.
Madam President, Senator Bach, we're reducing the payment approximately $1.3 million. And the reason we're doing that is one of the plants will fail to comply with the law. We enacted a law in 2009 that said if an ethanol plant was sold, that they would give up the rights to any ethanol payments that they had coming. An ethanol plant was sold recently. In fact, an ethanol plant in my district, this will be the one that's getting converted to isobutanol. As part of the requirements of the law, they would not qualify. Even though these are deficiency payments, they would not qualify with the changes we made in the law in 2009. So that plant does not qualify. That's the money we're taking out. The other plants all qualify, and again, this will be paid in the first year. This will totally finish up our promise to the ethanol industry. And so that finishes all those payments.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam President, Senator Magnus, it seems like a pretty substantial amendment in a number of ways, with fees that were in the bill now being taken out, with general fund appropriations now being increased in the bill. It just seems, Senator Magnus, that this work should have been done in the committee. so that all of the interest groups and constituencies that follow the work of the Ag Committee would have had an opportunity to testify on what the amendment does. So I guess if I have criticism, it's that the people outside the building here who followed the work of the committee now I think are being caught by total surprise with some pretty substantial changes to the bill, and that's a little disappointing.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. And to that point, and Senator Bach, you're correct. And I did not wish to make this magnitude of changes, but again, I went over to the Department of Agriculture. You saw the comments from the governor in the papers that we weren't supposedly our majority, our committee chairs were not working with the governor's staff, his commissioners. It certainly was not the case in agriculture. The commissioner and I had a visit about that, and he said, "Doug, don't take those comments from that the governor made in the paper this morning to heart about agriculture. It's not you in agriculture. It's not you and your committee. We've been working closely with the commissioner." But the Commissioner of Ag and the Commissioner of Pollution Control had met on Friday afternoon. I had talked to the Commissioner of Agriculture earlier that day. We had agreed to meet. And Senator Bach, I'm trying to put a bill together that is a good bill for agriculture, that passes the Senate floor, that I can go to conference committee with in a strong position, and in the end of the line, at the end of the day, get signed by the governor. And so a lot of these changes were made and suggestions that the governor himself made to our bill through the Department of Agriculture and working with the commissioner. And I'm just trying to do the best job we can, Senator Bach, and I apologize to some of the committee members that weren't privy to the final discussions that happened late Friday afternoon and into the evening. But I'm trying to protect agriculture, do the best bill we can, and yet recognize that we do need to work with our commissioners, our agencies, and with the governor. And so I'm just doing the best I can with that, Senator.
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Magnus, in committee, I questioned that we were taking the producer payments now that were supposed to, when they expired, go to do other agriculture initiatives, such as livestock producer grants, do work with our dairy industry, which has been struggling. I know we're putting some money into next gen, but we should have been doing more for renewable energies with those dollars. And now, are we, Senator Magnus, are we taking an additional $1.3 million from the producer's payments and using it for general fund deficit reduction? Is that what I'm hearing with this amendment?
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Scoy, what we're doing is again, this plant does not qualify, so that frees up about $1.28 million. It enables us to then fully fund the Department of Agriculture and the Board of Animal Health at the level the governor's at. Again, we're still taking a pretty big hit. But what that allowed us to do then also was to increase our funding to the Next Generation Energy Board. Coming out of our committee, we had set $3 million aside for that. We upped that to $3.5 million, added another $500,000 there. We still have, and then we did about $100,000 to a provision Senator Saxhog had for biofuel work or biomass work up in the range. And it still allows us $2.38 million in our efforts to look at other areas that we can support agriculture. And Senator Scoy, you brought up a good point because I think it is key. Madam President, members, agriculture is strong today. And there's a reason that it's strong. It's because of the efforts we've put in the past, the efforts that we've put in to control the bovine TB outbreak in northwest Minnesota. The legislature stepped up. Department of Agriculture, the Board of Animal Health all stepped up, did a great job. other states of looking at this, since they've had some bovine TB outbreaks, looked at the work that we have done in the legislature, Department of Ag, and the Board of Animal Health with admiration, and looking at that efforts that we did to control this outbreak and keep Minnesota, for the most part, TB-free status to allow free movement of our cattle and cattle outside of the state of Minnesota. So that's a tremendous effort that I want to compliment the Department of Agriculture and Board of Health on. And that's a good point Senator Scoia has brought up about how we keep a strong agricultural industry strong in the future. And we need to support our research programs. We need to support the department, the Board of Animal Health, and so on. So with this bill, we're able to do that. We're able to protect, number one, protect our food and dairy inspection services. It's vitally important that we protect our food supply. It keeps the Department of Agriculture in a position of strength. Members, I would point out other information you have on your desk outlining the export programs. President Obama's goal, one of his goals, is to double the amount of exports, agricultural exports from United States. We need to do that. Our part of our share of that here in Minnesota, we are the sixth largest agricultural state in the United States. We export a lot of products. One of the reasons why we need to keep the Department of Agriculture strong is if you look at the handouts here in color, you'll see that the number of phytosanitary certificates issued by the Department of Agriculture each year is growing very rapidly. Many of these certificates need to be turned around in a very short time period, most times within 8 hours. These shipments are ready to be sent out. They need to have a phytosanitary certificate to accompany those. And again, you'll see in the graph the different products sent out. Corn, dried distillers, grain from ethanol byproducts, soybean products, and et cetera. And you'll see the total of pounds and how that has grown. And you'll see the key markets. I felt it was important for members to recognize this as one of President Obama's initiatives to double the agricultural exports from the United States. Members, we have a responsibility. In fact, some folks think a moral right that we use the strength and resources that we have in agriculture production to help feed not only the rest of the United States here from Minnesota, but feed other parts of the world. 95% of the world's population lives outside of the United States, members. It's vitally important for us to keep Minnesota agriculture strong, keep United States agriculture strong, and provide that service to the rest of the world with the export markets we have. But you'll see, as we do build our exports, that the pressure on the Department of Agriculture continues to grow, because we do need to have the facilities in place, the people in place to handle this sort of growth. It doesn't just happen by accident, and again, it takes a lot of work to not only build those markets, but to service them. So I think this bill, members, does those key things, protects the core mission of agriculture, protects the core mission of the Board of Animal Health, and does allow some funds in the future, just like we did in the past, to get to Minnesota's position of strength today. Our research programs in the past got us there. It allows us to keep some research programs going on in the future and keep Minnesota agriculture strong for the good of the state.
Senator Scoia, to the A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Magnus, for that. And I want to thank you for your work that you've given into the Ag Committee and working with all the members. It's been a very collaborative experience. The producer payment language that's being removed in here that doesn't allow this payment to go to the plant that has been sold. You know, members, those payments were earned when that plant was in compliance with the law that was currently in place. The only reason that that plant is being denied those payments is because we delayed the producer payments here in the legislature and signed by the governor. It was through no fault of their own that that plant was is being denied these payments. And, you know, we did have a discussion on this issue in committee. I think it was Senator Benson that brought it up. From my recollection of the committee, we decided that it was appropriate to leave that language in. I think it's unfortunate that it's been removed, and I understand that, you know, there's issues with fees, but, you know, the food handler fee that's being removed, that's a user fee. The people that are selling the food are utilizing that service, having inspections so that food is safe. I personally thought it was an appropriate revenue source for that, and as opposed to taking these producer payments that, other than our action, would have been made to that ethanol plant. And so I think that, you know, you've worked and compromised, but in that area I'm disappointed.
To the A1 amendment, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Scoy. I wanted to keep those payments, too. I had worked with that plant. They had an agreement when they sold the plant that any payments that would be paid out would be paid to the farmers that had invested into that plant, and I wanted to keep it going. But in discussions with the governor was leery about that situation because, in fact, it was prohibited by the law we passed in 2009, and so I was not able to keep the payments because of the concerns raised by the administration. It does not change, however, our base amounts for the out years, and I think that's the biggest concern we on the Agriculture Committee had because, again, I'll go back to my statements that agriculture today is strong, and Minnesota's agriculture is strong. But members, it's strong because of the work we've done in the past. The last 20 years of work we've done and putting together our research programs and the support for various areas of agriculture. And folks, I'm talking about the second largest employer in the state of Minnesota. It's a huge industry, and it's vitally important to us. And I really feel strongly about this. To keep Minnesota strong, we have to have a strong agriculture industry because it's such a huge part of our lives. And again, we're blessed here in the state of Minnesota with tremendous resources on the agricultural side. We have a responsibility to the rest of the world to do what we can. We have the technology, we have the knowledge, we have the infrastructure needed to step up and do our part to feed the rest of the world. And so that was one of the missions that I went into to protect agriculture in this bill. I believe the bill does it. Yes, there are a few things I would have liked to have held on to, but unfortunately it was not able to do it.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment, Senator Benson.
Madam President, Senator Magnus, I did offer an amendment in committee. I appreciate you listening to my concerns over those smaller food providers that maybe now is not the time for them to take a hit on the inspection fees and doing your best to find a workable solution with the commissioner and the governor. And so I want to say thank you for your efforts.
Further discussion, Senator Bach.
Well, Senator Magnus, I find it a little interesting. It almost seems like if you've had conversations with the administration and the governor on Friday, like you're negotiating the conference committee report before you ever get to conference. And it just seems like if you wanted to make changes like this, they should have been made after the bill was passed in the conference committee so that the public could participate in the discussion about the changes that are going on here. I think it's a little inappropriate to offer it here, unless, of course, this bill, the House is going to take this bill and send it directly to the governor. I guess then maybe I could understand it. But, Senator Magnus, I think in the future it would be helpful, I think, to the other members of the committee and to all the people who follow these kind of issues that they have an opportunity to participate in the discussion, in the debate. And it seems a little interesting that we'd be kind of doing the work of the conference committee before we ever get there.
Senator Magnus.
Madam President, Senator Buck, I think you outlined the correct strategy. I think that's exactly what's going to happen. I think would take this bill right through the conference committee and go to the governor and have it sign it, because that's who I was talking to with basically Friday afternoon. I would like to have a bill here the governor can sign. And I would like to have a bill that's supported by the administration. And Senator Bach and others, you've been through a lot of conference committees. You know how this goes. There's going to be things that we negotiate in the conference committee, and we'll continue to do that. And I'll certainly work with the minority members and our committee members to put forth the best effort we can in the conference committee, because there are some things that frankly, we're not going to like in the House bill. This bill is better. I think the governor probably would sign it right out of the chute here by passing it, because it is a good bill. But that's what I'm trying to do, Senator Bach, is trying to do the best I can to work with the administration, the governor, and the legislature to get the best bill forward we can.
Discussion on the A1 amendment. Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, Senator Magnus, there was a lot of discussion on the retail handlers' fees, and the department made a compelling case, I thought the committee agreed, that this increase in fees would pay for two to three inspectors. They are currently, I believe it was 40-45% behind on making these inspections, and there's concern about having that role being taken over by the federal government, which is something that I don't think Minnesotans want. Because of these changes came up today since our committee met, I'm just wondering, are we finding any money for these fees at this point, or for these new staffers?
Senator Magnus.
Madam President, Senator Kielash, they are getting your money. We're just not raising the fees. And you are correct. We're 40 to 45% behind in our scheduled inspections that we need to do on retail food handlers. So I think the committee and all of us agreed we do need to protect our food industry. But it just came to the point of a question of how we do that. And after the bill left the Agriculture Committee, we went to the Finance Committee. Senator Bonhoeff, Senator Hahn, Senator Olson all talked to us about the situation where some of the local entities wanted to partner up and do some of the inspection fees themselves. There's a dispute between them, some of them, and the Department of Agriculture. So we needed to have some time to figure out how we're going to do this. I'm not convinced that those agreements the Department of Agriculture signs with local entities, is the way to go, or whether it all should be done in the Department of Agriculture, since the department has the lab there. Those local entities would need to send food products to the lab. I'm not certain how we do this, but in deference to those three senators I mentioned, we've decided to instead of just put a fee on and have the inspectors do this, that we do encourage the department to work together with some of the local entities, and that might be, as Senator Kielash, that might be the way to go. I'm not saying it isn't, but we just don't know yet. So we're encouraging the department to sit down and look at, instead of just having all the employees work for the department, maybe it is a proper thing to do to have some of these local entities combine and do that. But I don't know that for sure, so that's why we've gone that route instead of a longer-term fee.
Further discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, Senator Magnus renews his motion to adopt the A1 amendment to Senate File 1016. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The motion does prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1016 as amended. Senator Kubley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
Senator Kubley offers the A2 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Kubley moves to amend Senate File 1016 as follows, page 6, line 35. This is the A2 amendment.
Discussion to the A2 amendment. Senator Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. My voice is compromised today. I'll do the best I can. This amendment just restores 500,000 of the 780,000 cut to the AURI. It comes back from 2.5 million that was left in the agri fund. I did talk to Senator Magnus about this, and he told me to go ahead. AURI has done some good work in the rural parts of the state. Many of you know about soy ink these days. That's one of the products AURI has come up with. I think they do a good job of trying to create jobs for the rural parts of the state. So I hope you'll support this amendment. It does seem to me that we're spending a lot trying to create jobs, but let's not overlook spending a much lesser amount to keep the jobs we already have. Appreciate your support.
Discussion to the A2 amendment, Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Kubley, does this take the $500,000 out of the agri account? Okay, he's indicating yes, Madam Chair. In that case, Madam Chair, I would consider that a friendly amendment. I think it's a good idea.
Further discussion to the A2, Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Kubley, for offering this amendment. Members, AURI has done a lot of good work and really created a lot of industry in Minnesota. You might not be aware, but I would bet that the ink that's on these papers that are being passed around is coming from soy ink. That was an AURI project. For those of you that are concerned about the amount of plastic in our landfills, the peanut biodegradable packing peanuts that you see in your packaging material now is an AURI project. They've had a lot of success in the state. It's been good for value added for agriculture. One of the things that happens to agriculture is while we grow the product here, a lot of times we just export it as the raw commodity. And if we can do value added projects such as AURI has been supportive of, it really helps the rural economy as we can have some small industries in those areas. And I would ask your support.
Seeing no further discussion on the A2 amendment, Senator Kubley renews his motion to adopt the A2 amendment to Senate File 1016. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1016. Seeing no further discussion, Secretary will give Senate File 1016 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1016, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for agriculture, third reading.
Secretary will give Senator Cohen.
Madam President, let me offer a couple of comments relative to passage of this bill, particularly to the 24 new members of the Senate on the floor. Because I will only suggest, Madam President, I should just mention for members, the President and I went back and forth a couple weeks ago with Senator Bach relative to an appropriate time to make some general comments, and I had the opportunity to talk to the President about this for a minute at the start of session. But I'll suggest to members this is a pretty big day for everybody, because with the passage of Senate File 1016 in a couple of minutes, we're going to embark on something we have never done before on the floor of the Senate. We are about to start toward the passage of the largest general fund budget in the history of the state of Minnesota. Not number two, not number three, not number four. This is the largest general fund budget in the history of the state of Minnesota. Members might recall there was a PBS show, I forget the name of it, X number of years ago, Carl Sagan, who's deceased now, but he made reference, it was a show on astronomy. He made reference to the billions and billions and billions of stars in the universe. Well, we're going to begin passing the budget that's going to be billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars, and at a level we've never done before, ever in the history of the state. The 12-13 budget is going to be $34.33 billion in general fund dollars taxed to the citizens of Minnesota. The 10-11 budget 2 years ago was $30.171 billion, I believe. So the difference is over $4 billion. Now, members might suggest that we're actually spending less money than what had been projected at the start of the year, But keep in mind, the budget 2 years ago involved the addition of federal stimulus money, money from the federal government, money that we, you know, some folks would suggest we should not have used. But in terms of a budget passed totally on the backs of Minnesota taxpayers, we're number one when we start passing Senator Magnus's bill. His bill is only, I think, what, a little under $80 million. But it puts us on the path of passing the larger bills, the K-12 bill, the Health and Human Services bill, the higher ed bill, the corrections bill, which have billions of dollars. We've never done this before. Now, I happen to be one who, at the start of the session, as some of us were talking, I said it couldn't be done. And members might recall that the rhetoric back then was we were going to have a budget of $32 billion, and that was plenty. Now we have a budget of $34.6 billion $34.3 billion, and that's plenty, I guess. But the reality is it's still billions of dollars. And I had suggested in some private conversations it couldn't be done. Now, those of you who are new don't know that I've spent a decent amount of time with politics, both at a national and a state level. And so I like following politics just as a student of it. And I just thought, given all the little Tea Party rallies this past year and all the campaign rhetoric and all the rest of it, that there's no way the majority would pass the single largest general fund budget in the history of the state of Minnesota. I said, no way. I was wrong. I stand corrected. I apologize. I was almost given, Madam President, some thought. You're not supposed to have various props on the Senate floor. I was given some thought. You know, at athletic events, you've got these foam fingers. You wave around saying, we're number one. I was thinking of maybe buying 67 of them to see if we could wave them around on the Senate floor that we're number one. And I suggest this, Madam President, members, because I know what I'll hear back is, well, you know, Governor Dayton's presented a larger budget. Keep in mind, Governor Dayton has only presented a budget. He has proposed a budget. The governor does not enact a budget. You're beginning to enact the budget, the single largest general fund budget ever, ever, ever in the history of the state of Minnesota. And I don't know how this comports or belies the campaign rhetoric, but you get to go home, all of you on the Senate floor, all 67 of us, and say to our constituents, we held the general fund increase to only 13.6%. Only 13.6% of an increase over the general fund from 2 years ago. Members, we're not cutting government today. We begin on the path to increasing government. And I just simply want to say congratulations on being number one.
Further discussion on Senate File 1016, Senator Michelle.
Well, Madam President, I'm hoping you'll give me at least as much leeway as you gave the my colleague and fiscal hawk, Senator Cohen. Senator Cohen and I have, I think, have a pretty good relationship in a number of committees, so I appreciate and I pay attention when he speaks. But, Madam President, I think Senator Cohen is going to have to figure out his the talking points, because this is either an all-cuts, barbaric budget, or it's the biggest ever. It's going to be hard for you to say both of those things. So that's your first challenge, members. The federal government is not sending any checks anymore. President Obama and Congress are not sending any checks anymore. So we're going to have to do this all by ourselves. We're going to have to balance the budget by ourselves. That's good. That's responsible. We are ready to do it. We're ready to do it, Senator Cohen. So I hope that your decades of budgeting experience can be put to use. So I will ask Senator Cohen if he plans to introduce a budget. If the minority plans to introduce a budget, we're prepared to take that up. I would ask Senator Cohen if he's going to carry the governor's budget bill or the governor's tax bill or not. Because time's flying by here. We're down to, I think it's 58 days. 58 days. So we can either deal in hypothetical budgets or, as Senator Magnus is doing, we can bring an actual budget to the floor and start to build something that balances, start to build something that gets our work done on time, respects the taxpayers, and gets this economy moving again. So thank you, Senator Magnus, for your work. And Senator Cohen, I look forward to more of this sparring in the future.
Further discussion, Senator Cohen.
Well, Madam President, Senator Michelle, your characterization, we have a pretty good relationship. Is that, I thought we had a very good relationship, Senator Michelle. I'm sorry it's kind of dropped to only pretty good. Senator Michelle, you asked when where the budget is. We have the budget from the governor. We have the budget pages from the governor. We have the budget books from the governor. As you know, I sit as a member of your committee. I sit there every day with the budget book in front of me of the governor's budget. So we have the governor's budget. My comments indicated that the governor proposes a budget. He doesn't pass a budget. We pass the budget. That's number one. Number two, as to rhetoric, my rhetoric during my campaign was not that I would cut the size of government. That wasn't my rhetoric. That was your rhetoric. My rhetoric talked about what I thought the needs were for the state of Minnesota, where we go over these next couple of decades. That was my rhetoric during my campaign. But I just want to suggest and make the point that maybe this underscores that rhetoric during a campaign is easy. And it's easy to say, we're going to pass a smaller budget. We're not going to extend or increase government. But when push comes to shove, easier said than done, I guess. And maybe that's the point we ought to make and the point everybody on this floor ought to remember. Obviously, we have 24 new members on the floor, I believe six of whom have served in the House, or in the case of Senator Nino, had served in the Senate previously. So those folks have been through some of this before. But I understood the rhetoric to be, and I'm not looking at individual members on the floor, I just indicated I kind of following the trend of politics last year, the campaigns both on a national and a state level, that the rhetoric was we can live within our means. Well, our means was a general fund budget paid for by the taxpayers of the state of Minnesota of $30 billion and some change. The budget we're passing is $34-plus billion. It's an increase. I did misstate one thing. I looked at my notes. It's not an increase of 13.6%. It's an increase of 13.8%. So we are increasing the cost to the taxpayers. And you're right, Senator Michelle, absent the free money, we are increasing the cost to the taxpayers by 14%. And it just strikes me that that belies the campaign rhetoric. So maybe it's a good lesson. Watch out what you say during a campaign. You're not going to be able to keep the promise.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, good discussion here from my friend Senator Michelle and my good friend Senator Cohen. Sits close to me on the floor, so I have to be careful. He'll come over here. But my bill, our agriculture and rural economies bill, cuts the budget $12.5 million, or about 14%. You have to remember, folks, our agriculture budget, again, the second largest industry in the state of Minnesota, a source of strength for the state, source of great resource for not only the state but the world, is less than 0.25% of the budget. So what we're doing by cutting this budget about 14% is we're stepping up, doing our part. We know there's tough times out there. We realize that. We realize our income is down. But we do realize also, we told the world members on the last day of February when we released the budget forecast how much money we had. what is our means, $34.2 billion, and that's a decision that's been made to go with that amount of spending, because that is our means, and we're living within our means. And it's difficult. It's difficult to make these cuts in a lot of the program areas to support the tremendous growth in health and human services, and expand the entitlements across a broader base and everything else, and huge increases, and again, minus the federal funds coming in at this point, and members likely to have less federal funds in the future. But this is the target I was given by our leadership. We're within the target. Again, the cuts are difficult, but it still maintains a strong agriculture, which means a strong Minnesota. It still maintains our core missions for the department to protect our food safety, to protect our livestock industry, and yet pays off the commitments we've made in the past to our biofuels industry, again, a great a resource for the state. It provides additional funding, or continued funding, I should say, for our future research programs, the Agriculture Utilization and Research Institute is key to promote our value-added products. The more value we can add to the raw materials we're producing here in the state of Minnesota, the better. Helps to keep Minnesota agriculture strong. With that, Madam Chair, I would like to thank the members of the Agriculture Committee, both minority and majority members. You've been really great to work with, and I can tell you that as your chair, I really appreciate that. Every one of you have contributed greatly to the discussion in the committee, some good ideas, some good discussion, and I really appreciate that. I also want to thank our staff, my staff in the Senate Agriculture Committee. I want to thank the minority staff also for their work. I want to thank the counsel, Greg Knopf, fiscal analyst Dan Mueller. Great work, fellas, trying to help a lot of new members in our staff. Our Senate staff is going to be vitally important here this year as we continue to do that. I also really appreciate working with my friend, the Agriculture Commissioner, and his efforts, and working with the governor and trying to put together a bill that accomplishes our goals, protects our missions, our core missions. We all realize we're in difficult times, but these are areas that are vital to us. So I appreciate their working together too, through countless hours of meetings and putting together, I think, a good bill for the situation we have. With that, Madam President, I would ask the members for their support.
Further discussion, Senator Brown.
Yes. Thank you, Madam President. Just a quick response to Senator Cohen. I say thank God for the many freshmen that we have here. It's the voters' response to saying we are tired of career politicians. So I am very happy that there are numerous freshmen here this year.
Madam President.
Further discussion, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, I just want to respond to Senator Brown. I'm not in any way disagreeing with the number of freshmen. I welcome folks who are new. Don't misunderstand me in any respect that this is that my comments were meant as a criticism of new members. To the contrary. But the issue is the context of where this budget leads on the Senate floor, and that's that it does lead to an extremely large general fund budget that we've never passed before in the history of the state. So I don't want anybody who's new on the floor to misunderstand my comments that it's meant to be a criticism of folks being here, because we've all been freshmen in this place at one time or another, some of us longer ago than others. But I hope Senator Brown doesn't misunderstand that.
I have Senator Scoy, then Senator Ortman, then Senator Roebling. Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Magnus and members, I've expressed my concern about the reduction in producer payments earlier, so I'm not going to do that. But we did remove the food handlers' fees and substituted producer payments monies for those. But Senator Magnus, I am, as I expressed in committee, concerned about the use of farmers' ability to use anhydrous ammonia in the state of Minnesota. And, you know, we've got the Minnesota Department of Ag that currently inspects anhydrous ammonia plants.
We've got the commercial division of the Highway Patrol that are inspecting the anhydrous plants. And here I see that we still have the fee on reinspection of anhydrous in here, and we still have the 75 cent per ton surcharge on anhydrous in here. And I'm wondering if we've made any move toward, you know, getting rid of these fees that farmers actually pay, as opposed to removing the fees that just the retailers pay, because I'm concerned about the agriculture's ability to use this very effective fertilizer and why we have left these fees in place.
Senator Magnus, to that question.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Squay. That's a very good question, and that's my concern also. You might recall on the retail food handlers fee, some issues came up in the Finance Committee relating to that, and it was our decision that we needed to sit down and really think through that inspection process a little better, and with the concerns of three senators that came to me with that idea. So we did not enact a fee and create a long-term fee and solution to that. At the time, I felt it was the fee was the right thing to do. I had significant documentation from the Department of Agriculture showing that they are behind their goals, that it does take significant time to train these folks according to the federal guidelines. It takes about 6 months before a new person would be able to do the role as an inspector on the low and medium risk retailers. The higher risk ones would take a year of training. So it is a long-term commitment to do this. Unfortunately, with the issues that were raised by three senators, we felt we needed to step back and look at some additional information we need to put together before we would commit to a longer-term fee. For the anhydrous ammonia one, and I share your concern, Senator. You and I are both farmers, and we need to, we need to continually produce more with less. That's the facts we have. And anhydrous ammonia is a key source of food nutrients for our crops, especially in corn. But this agreement, the handlers, agriculture groups, the retailers and so on have come to peace in the valley over this and have agreed to a longer term fee because they recognize that anhydrous is a dangerous product. We are concerned about safety out there. For the one charge of 75 cents a ton, that beefs up the inspection service from the Department of Agriculture. Again, something that the industry has agreed with. No one wants to see any accidents out there, and everyone wants to see us be able to continue to use anhydrous ammonia. The other charge is a $400 reinspection fee. If you do find, if the inspectors do find safety issues out there and concerns out there, then they're going to go back and reinspect that to make sure that those issues have been resolved, and that's the cause of the fee there again. We want to be able to use the products that we have out there that are economical and a good resource for us.
Further discussion, Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. To you, Senator Magnus, I appreciate your leadership and the work of your committee. Thank you for your work on this bill. But I wanted to ask Senator Cohen if he would yield.
Senator Cohen, will you yield? Senator Cohen will yield.
Thank you, Madam President.
Senator Ortman.
I've had the pleasure of sitting next to Senator Cohen in a committee for the first time this year. I don't believe we've served on any committees prior to this year, and I've enjoyed the conversations that we've had. He is quite a historian. And I wanted to ask Senator Cohen for the context that he's tried to set here, if he would explain to the members here and to those that might be watching how much the current law budget is, the budget that the Senate DFL left, how much that would spend. My understanding is it's $39 billion, the budget that was left to the state if we adopted all of the provisions of the budget from the last biennium. Is that correct, Senator Cohen? And do you have the exact number for that 2012-13 budget with the current law changes?
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, first I want to also indicate that I have learned from Senator Ortman, and I know she's doing a very good job in the work she's on the tax committee. I also want to make it clear how much personally I appreciate what Senator Ortman's done for me this year, because we get caught up in our schedules, we're doing a million things, and she will bring a little piece of candy for me, so I have lunch occasionally. Senator Ortman, I just want to the body, thank you for that. As to your other question, however, I don't think it's quite 39, but I think 38 plus. No question, a larger figure. My point was that's projected spending. That's not what we've spent. That's not what we've budgeted. My comment is relative to what's about to be passed off the Senate floor during, I assume, this next week, which is the largest general fund budget paid for by the taxpayers ever. It's not to suggest that there aren't larger numbers being floated around. There are some folks and interest groups who'd like to have a budget of $50 billion in general fund dollars for, as best I know, if you start adding up everything that's out there. I'm talking about what we're actually passing off the Senate floor, because everybody can talk a good game, whether they want to spend less, they spend more, spend the same. It's what we do on the Senate floor that counts.
Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Madam President. And Senator Cohen, I think, has confirmed, but the number is 39.02. $39.02 billion. The budget that was adopted for us last year, if we were to enact that budget, would spend, just with current law changes, $39.02 billion. Many of us thought that the reductions that were made in the last biennium should have been made permanent. But the DFL leadership in the Senate refused that. So instead, they gave us, bequeathed to us, a budget that would spend $39.2 billion. The governor, for context members, has proposed a $37 billion deficit, or billion-dollar budget. Most of it dependent upon new taxes, billions of dollars of new taxes. As a very reasonable alternative, the Senate Republican leadership has proposed a budget of $34 billion, which is $5 billion less than the Senate DFL plan and $3 billion less than the governor's plan. It's a $34 billion plan that will not raise taxes to balance our budget and resolve the $5 billion deficit. So, Senator Magnus, I appreciate your work towards this goal. I know Minnesotans do as well. I'm very appreciative. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, would Senator Ortman yield for a brief question?
Senator Ortman, will you yield? She will yield.
Okay, Madam President, Senator Ortman, have I misstated that the general fund budget from the previous biennium, 10-11, to this biennium, 12-13, is an almost 14% increase? Have I misstated that?
Senator Ortman.
Madam President, I don't know.
Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. And I'm glad that Senator Cohen thinks that $34 billion is really a lot of money. And it is a lot of money. It's almost the same amount of money that was spent 4 years ago when the general fund budget was $33.9 billion. $400 million less 4 years ago than what we're proposing to spend in our targets today. 4 years ago, only $400 million less. So Senator Cohen must like $34 billion because that's what we had 4 years ago. And we actually had over $34 billion, more than what we're spending now in our last budget, in the current budget that we're at right now, because we did have the federal stimulus money and we did have the education shift. And we're spending less than we did in the last budget, in this proposed budget. And so I just wanted to point that out, that we were almost at $34 billion 4 years ago in general fund dollars. So yes, Senator Cohen, you are right. This is the largest general fund budget. But it also means that Minnesota has prospered some during that time. Certainly we've had some setbacks, but even during that time, we've had some growth in general fund dollars without increasing taxes. So we're going to use that money. I think that's appropriate. We're still living within our means, but Senator Cohen has challenged us to stay within our means now, and I don't think we'll have a problem meeting that challenge.
Senator Hoffman, I have you next on my list. Senator Hoffman passes. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in support of Senate File 1016. This is a very good ag bill, folks, and I'd like to reiterate some of the things that Senator Magnus said, that agriculture drives this state. Whether it's forest products, byproducts, whether it's animal agriculture, soybeans, beets, corn, agriculture has got to stay healthy for us to get out of where we're at right now with these deficits. So I appreciate Senator Magnus and your team and everybody on this committee for working on some of the issues that have been brought up. And I appreciate Senator Kubley, Senator Skoy, your amendment for increased funding for AURI. I think that's a wonderful organization, along with increased funding for Next Gen Board, because those are the projects, that's where funding needs to go to keep agriculture sound and strong and moving forward. So I ask for your support on this bill.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1016. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 34 ayes and 25 nays. Took it. There being 39 ayes and 25 nays. The bill is passed and its title agreed to. Next on special orders is Senate File 887, number 28 on general orders. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 887 is the Jobs and Economic Growth Committee budget. Members, we have passed out or are passing out a summary, a spreadsheet, and also some documentation that refers to a legislative auditor's report. I will get into that in a second. So an overview, Madam President. This budget involves a number of state agencies and boards, members. The two largest state agencies whose general fund budgets we adjust are DEED, the Department of Economic of Employment and Economic Development, and the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. Those two agencies combined are more than 90% of the general fund budget in this area. Other agencies that are involved in this budget, members, the Department of Labor and Industry, the Science and Technology Authority, the Accountancy Board, the other related boards, including Architecture, Engineering, Surveying, Landscape, Geosciences, and Interior Design, We have the Barbers Board. We have the Combative Sports Commission. Combative Sports Commission, that's a fun one, Senator Cohen. The Cosmetologist Board, Mediation Services, Workers' Comp, and the IRRB. So members, the base general fund spending for this budget is $168.2 million. Again, that's reflected on the spreadsheet and in your materials. Before you, Incentive File 887 is a budget of $103.2 million. So there's roughly $65 million in changes, members. Let me highlight three specific issues. The first, members, is, and let me ask you to take a quick look, if you would, at the documentation related to the Legislative Auditor's Report. So it's actually a stapled package of materials that says Positively Minnesota on the front. This is important, members, because what we are doing in this legislation is putting together a block grant program. A block grant program for us to transition and move our workforce training and job training programs over to a new block grant competitive bid process within the Department of Economic Development. Members, this is in direct response to something the legislative auditor brought forward last year in February. And I want to note on, it's actually the second page of your handout, there's several bulleted points. This is key, members. The legislature should not mandate grant recipients in law, but instead allow the selection of recipients through a competitive process administered by DEED. And that fourth bullet, DEED should more consistently monitor recipients of legislative appropriations and develop an equitable way of funding its monitoring activities. Members, if you go to what's labeled page 3 in that same handout, you will see that we have 29 separate workforce development and job training programs. Some of them funded at $100,000 level, some of them funded in the past at $1 million. 29 separate programs. Members, our discussion in committee and the legislative auditor's report has shown a light on this and allowed us to conclude that we need to do this differently. Members, I would contend that this is kind of our version of earmarking. This is the way that the legislature can make specific line item appropriations, bypassing DEED, frankly, bypassing any kind of review. You will know some of these programs, and you will like some of these programs. Our contention is that the programs that are doing good work, that are doing good job training, that are doing good workforce development, they are going to win. They're going to win under this new competitive bid process. So members, I'd ask you to take an extra moment to read some of the materials that were brought to us by the legislative auditor. That's an important piece of this bill. Secondly, members, we are asking, again, in the Department of Employment and Economic Development, we're asking for the Trade Office, the mission of the Trade Office, to be done in a different way. This actually relates back to something that candidate Mark Dayton said during the campaign. The Trade Office organizes trade missions, does some training for Minnesota companies involved in exports and trade. Members, in a tight fiscal time, we believe this is something that can be brought into the governor's office or prioritized in a different way within DEED. So we take a savings there, members, of $3 million. Clearly, members, clearly trade has to be an important part of our economic recovery. But other states use public-private partnerships. Other states run this their trade offices through the governor's office. So we're going to ask the agency to do trade in a different way. And members, I do think it responds to a criticism that has been heard over time that governors of all parties, Governors of all parties have used the trade office sometimes for what looks like junkets or their own trade missions. And again, Mr. Dayton had some strong words for this last summer. So we think we're meeting the governor there, although I don't want to leave anyone the impression that the governor supports this. We've heard some strong opposition to this from Deed and from the trade office director who's in there now. Finally, members, I want to highlight the IRRRB. We are transferring $45 million from the Doug Johnson Trust Fund. Doug Johnson's a former member of this body, members, and this fund within the IRRRB's jurisdiction has a balance of $122 million right now, $122.9 million. And so we have challenged the IRRRB to be a part of responding to this budget deficit. So this is this represents this $45 million transfer, members, would represent 0.9 tenths of 1%. 0.9 tenths of 1%. So I'm sure, based on the discussions we had in committee, that we'll have some more discussions about this on the floor. But I would challenge all of us and every agency that, as Governor Dayton said, we are in a fiscal, we have a horrendous fiscal situation. And so all state agencies are going to have to participate. And so with this large balance, members, we're going to transfer a piece of this in. And if there are other ideas for how this particular agency can help us get out of a $5 billion hole, we'd certainly be open to them, Madam President. So, members, that is a quick overview. Again, you have the spreadsheet in front of you. And a staff summary. I do want to thank staff. We had over 7 hours of hearings last week, members. Again, this touches on a number of smaller state agencies, and the last number that I'll give you, at least at the outset here, is that 90% of what these agencies do, 90% of their funds are federal funds. 90% of their funds come from somewhere other than the general fund. So this is a very small piece of what some of these agencies and boards and commissions do. And we're coming in on target. I'll stand for questions.
Further discussion on Senate File 887. Senator Metzen.
Madam President, members, this competitive bid thing I think is bogus. I think we're elected to make these decisions at this level. You're hitting things like the Boys and Girls Clubs, deaf and hard of hearing, dislocated workers, extended employment, high-risk adults, RISE, Opportunity Industrialization Centers, Ramsey County Summer Youth, Minneapolis Summer Youth, RISE, Youth Build. And you're giving this authority to the bureaucrats across the street, the governor and his department head. I think we're highly capable as legislators to make these decisions. We have been doing it over the years, and we should continue to do them. Are you going to allow this to happen in the DNR, the commerce area, the ag area, give these decisions to the department heads? I don't think so. That's why Metzen and Michelle and others got elected to make these decisions. I don't want to give up this authority to some bureaucrat across the street. We're very capable, Senator Michelle and others, to make these decisions on the Minnesota Senate floor. I think this is the wrong direction. We'll see. I've got an amendment to change it back. I don't know if I'll introduce it at this moment, but why give up our authority to do this? If we have to make some cuts, and I agree with that, cuts have to be made, and I'm willing to make the cuts. I'm willing to make them, not the commissioner across the street. And I will help you make those cuts, but we should be making the cuts in this body.
Further discussion on Senate File 887, Senator Michelle.
Well, thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Metzen. And I, in no way does this bill reflect any criticism of what you have personally done in the past. I've enjoyed working with you. But members, I think we were persuaded by the strong language that the legislative auditor provided. It's fun to appropriate money. It's fun to direct money from the floor of the state Senate, from the legislature. But members, we are part-time. We are part-time. We shouldn't have to work beyond May this year. And these programs and what they do are important. They need to be measured. They need to be benchmarked. We need to give the department some specific direction. I agree with that, Senator Metzen, and you and I have talked about doing a little more work on that this session. So I commit to doing that with you. But members, some of the specific programs that Senator Metzen mentioned, I do think they're doing a good job, but I don't know that based on a thorough review from the department. I don't know that. So let's build in some measurements, Senator Metzen, and then that will allow us to make better decisions going forward. And I think it'll also allow the department to be more involved in this review when we're not around.
Further discussion, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, Senate File 887 is supposed to be the jobs bill, but I look at it as a real job killer bill. And it kills jobs one cut at a time. We're ending exports by eliminating the trade office. We're jeopardizing job placement and enforcement, too. We're complicating a process that could lead to unbelievable bureaucracy. We'll be missing money by forfeiting federal funds. We'll be putting families on the street. And one of the most outrageous things is raiding funds at the IRRRB, the Doug Johnson Fund. To take $45 million out of the Doug Johnson Fund is unbelievable that it's even in this bill. The Doug Johnson Fund and the taconite tax is a production tax that is paid in lieu of property taxes on the Iron Range, and it's a tax on the mining companies. And these funds were meant to be spent in northern Minnesota where they're collected, just like the property taxes in Edina or in Minnetonka or anywhere else in the state. Jesse James would be very proud of you at this time, Senator Michelle, because the rate on this fund is something that I can't ignore. You know, when ore is mined on the Iron Range, it's taxed once. It can only be taxed every one time, and after it's gone, it can't be taxed again. And so when all the ore is gone, there won't be any taxes being paid to anybody on the Iron Range. And that puts us at a very big disadvantage for the future and for what happens when our kids and our grandkids are in need of a fund like this. Now, you have taken the Doug Johnson Fund, $45 million, saying you're going to pay it back, but everybody knows that we can't bind another legislature to pay back the money. And so the loan provision in the bill is only a hope and a prayer. But the fact of the matter is that the Doug Johnson Fund makes up more than 70% of the cut in this bill, and the Iron Range has only about 3% of the population. On January 28th of this year, the Environment Committee and the Jobs Committee came to the Iron Range to look at what was going on in the Iron Range and heard from many of the people on the Iron Range. There were 17 senators that came up. It was a very impressive showing to find out what they could do about jobs. And then the first bill out of the chute takes $45 million out of our jobs fund. In 1941, Republican Governor Harold Stassen created the IRRRB, and the reason he created the IRRRB is because he was aware of the fact that someday the pits will be empty, and they'll be full of water, and the towns will be surrounded by big holes, and they can't go anywhere. And he said, we got to do something in order to help that area so they can diversify their economy when the mining industry is no longer around. And that's what the Doug Johnson Fund is for. And when you take $45 million out of the Doug Johnson Fund, what you're saying is, we don't really care about the future of the Iron Range. We don't really care if they're able to diversify their economy We don't really care if it's been set aside, and we don't really care if it's their property taxes. We're going to use their property taxes to settle the deficit in the general fund, and incidentally, it'll only do it one time. So are we going to come back in 2 years and then take another $45 million from the Doug Johnson Fund to settle the deficit again? The region's property tax dollars, as I said, are set aside for the future. And this fund is used at the IRRRB for projects to create jobs and also to diversify the economy. We have quite a few good examples of what the fund has already done, with over 3,000 jobs created, and we're looking to this fund for as our seed corn for the future. And to give you an idea of what the IRRRB does and what the Taconite Tax Relief Area is, I'm the senator of the 5th Senate District. My Senate District is completely within St. Louis County. But the IRRRB and the Taconite Production Tax distributes funds to 15 different school districts, over 40 communities and townships, in over 7 counties. Now, 5 of the 6 mines are in my district and within 60 miles of each other, and 4 of the 6 plants are also in my district. And so you can see that this disparity of where it gets spread out is all over the area, and to start taking money out of funds that are set up for a wide area like that will have a wide-ranging effect and will have a very negative effect on our economy. And so, Madam President and Senator Michelle, I can't let this go without trying to remove it from the bill, and so I have the A51 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni offers the A51 amendment. Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 887 as follows. Page 6, delete lines 10 to 29. This is the A51 amendment.
To the A51 amendment, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. What the A51 amendment does is it deletes the transfer of the Doug Johnson Fund, and it takes $45 million from the unemployment compensation taxes before they go into the trust fund. And members, the fact that the $45 million has been removed from the Doug Johnson Fund is a very good indication that there's a revenue problem in this bill, and that revenue needs to be raised somewhere. It's outrageous that it has been chosen, the Doug Johnson Fund has been chosen as the target for this, because, as I said, it's our property taxes, it's our seed corn, and nobody else in the state uses their property taxes to settle general fund problems like this. And so, members, I urge your support of this, because it at least takes the money from a place where we can put something into the general fund. If you need to use it later on for the unemployment, you can pay it back in 3 years, as you suggested, with the Doug Johnson Fund.
To the A51 amendment. Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Tomasoni, for paying for your amendment. Members, I'd oppose the A51, and note that Senator Tomasoni still cannot answer the challenge. Can you find $1 of savings from the IRRRB or another agency that you're very interested in, Senator Tomasoni? $1 savings that we can commit to this budget deficit.
Further discussion, Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President, Senator Michelle, that's your job. It's not my job. But I have given you an alternative here, and quite frankly, it's not the IRRRB's job to be settling the state budget. In fact, the IRRRB doesn't get any general fund money from the state. All the money at the IRRRB is from the production tax on the Iron Range, goes there in as a formula, and it is totally inappropriate for this legislature to be robbing money from the fund on the Iron Range to settle the budget.
Further discussion on the A51 amendment, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. A little historical perspective for Senator Michelle. The DJJ Trust Fund was set up in 1977, Senator Michelle, and was set up so that a portion of the taconite taxes that were paid by the companies in lieu of property taxes went into a trust account. Because, as everybody knows, mining is an extraction business, and someday it's going to be gone. And you can look around the country and see areas where mining has lived its life cycle, and now it's gone, and many of those communities are like Appalachia. There's nothing left. They're ghost towns. There was a great deal of wisdom put into the thought of creating a trust account so that a portion of the property taxes the mining companies pay would go into a trust fund so that someday when the mines are gone, there'll be a pool of money, like a foundation, available where the interest could be drawn off to try and rebuild and diversify the economy of the Iron Range. The Iron Range is a unique place in this state with an economy that we know someday is going to go away. And there won't be any jobs there unless we have a pot of money to do the diversification, bring new industries, add value to other resources. So there was a lot of foresight put into the creation of this trust fund, and the agency does spend the interest off of it, the interest, for economic development projects. And with a supermajority of the board has the authority to actually go into the corpus and use part of the corpus, which, Senator Michel, is what you're doing. And we've done that a couple of times in the last 5 or 6 years, and I'd like to tell you about it. Back about 8 years ago, I met with the fee holders who owned some royalties over on the west part of the Iron Range. Used to be a mine over there called Butler Taconite. And it folded up in the 80s when times were really tough. Well, the people that owned the minerals deposit under the surface had an interest in developing that mine again. So I met with them. They're from all over the country. And they said, you know, Tom, if you could give us $5 million, if you give us $5 million, we'd like to start working on a project to reopen the old Butler Taconite site. They could have never went to a bank. A bank would have never done it. But they came to the IRRRB. We made a decision as a board with a supermajority to take $5 million out of that corpus and fund that economic development project that nobody else would fund. The result of it was today, some years later, they're pouring concrete. They're pouring concrete for a whole new industry in this state. We're going to make steel in this state, from iron ore to steel, the first time ever. And it's a company from India that's investing $1.8 billion in Minnesota. That was only made possible because of that trust fund. Because a pot of money had been put aside to try to add value to these natural resources. Now, if that's not enough, let me talk to you about the Mesaba Nugget plant at Hoyt Lakes. Some of you were here in 2001 when LTV Mining Company shut down. And we gave a small appropriation to a consultant to go out and find us a steelmaking project, some kind of project where we can replace some of those 1,400 jobs at Hoyt Lakes that were lost. We found a project in Japan, a company by the name of Colby Steel, and they had developed a new rotary hearth technology, frankly, members, about the size of a desk, a little hearth a meter across, where they were working on a brand new state-of-the-art technology to make a value-added iron product. We brought it from Japan. We funded a demonstration plant in Silver Bay in an existing building, and we made the hearth bigger. We took it from the size of a desk to 12 meters across. Mesaba Nugget. The state was a tremendous partner. We leveraged some money out of the 21st Century Minerals Fund over at Deed. The demonstration project at Silver Bay was successful. The IRRRB invested $18 million out of that trust fund on a project that a bank would have never financed. The project would have never happened. It was made possible by a supermajority vote of that board, and today, Steel Dynamics owns that plant. It's constructed. It's making a new value-added product here in Minnesota. Steel Dynamics from Indiana invested almost $300 million in Minnesota to build that plant, all because of a little seed investment up at the IRRRB. That project would have never happened. And I find it pretty ironic that the party that talks about jobs, jobs, jobs is going to undermine an economic development authority on the Iron Range that has had some incredible success in the last couple years of bringing, just on two projects, over $2 billion of investment to Minnesota. $2 billion of investment in adding value to Minnesota's resources. Senator Michelle, it's very short-sighted. Very short-sighted.
Further discussion, Senator Saxog. On them.
Well, thank you, Madam President. And I want to get more specific than either Senator Tomasoni or Senator Buck, because Senator Michelle is asking Senator Tomasoni to give him an example of $1 that was being used to take out of this $45 million that was going to be used for the deficit. And I would maintain that, well, there's $45 million there that are going to be used ultimately for the deficit because they're going to be used for job creation. And I'm not going to talk for a long time, but there's two things that we talk about up in northeastern Minnesota a lot. One is diversification. We know that we're a natural resource-based industry, but we know it's not all steel. It's non-ferrous. It's wood products, it's tourism, it's all sorts of things, but they're all natural resource based, and they all start with businesses, and those businesses all pay taxes. That's how we get rid of the deficit. The last piece, and Senator Bach I think covered it very well, is value added. We've been making taconite and washing red ore in northeastern Minnesota for a long time. But we finally at the point where we're going to make steel up there. That is a huge amount of value added. And it's something, again, that is going to promote the payment of taxes and ultimately create the jobs that we're looking for. So I would implore the Senator Michelle to think twice before he takes this $45 million and transfers it to where he's going to do that. Thank you.
Discussion on the A51 amendment, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President, members. You know, I've been here for just a short period of time, and all I've heard from this body, especially from the minority party, is that this is one Minnesota. Whenever Senator Bach talks about the LGA cuts, it's one Minnesota. We all have to share the sacrifice. And my district is a high lake area district. So whenever I hear rules coming down from this body that affect my district, I wonder, well, why are we doing this if it doesn't affect you in the north? Well, because we're one Minnesota. So I would ask Senator Bach when the minerals in northern Minnesota turned into northern Minnesota's minerals and not all of Minnesota's minerals. I would ask why we have a carve-out for northern Minnesota when it's all of Minnesota's natural resources that we just heard about a minute ago. I really believe that if we are one Minnesota, then that has to apply to all of Minnesota, not just a little part of Minnesota when they need a carve-out for their so-called economic development. I am one of those people that stood up after watching this body for 38 years try and dictate what private business does. I'm one of those people that said no more. And so in the 12 weeks that I have been here, I have seen that we cannot unravel 38 years of liberal big government policies in 12 weeks. This is a start. This is a reform of government. I thank Senator Michelle for bringing this forward, and I ask all the members of this body to support this bill of Senator Michelle's, and I oppose this amendment.
Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, I want to clarify something I think that wasn't quite accurate that Senator Hoffman said. This has nothing to do with the minerals. Nothing to do with the minerals. What this has to do with is local property taxes. And no place else in this budget, I would bet, are we going to take some community's local property taxes. You know, Senator Senjum I looked at what the Mayo Clinic pays in property taxes in Olmsted County. They pay about $10 million a year in property taxes in Olmsted County. I am not going to propose that we take Olmsted County's property taxes that the Mayo Clinic pays to help balance the budget, Senator Hoffman. And I'm not going to propose in Red Wing, where Senator Howe, who's not here today, told me that XL Energy pays 34% of all the property taxes that are paid in Red Wing. I'm not going to propose that we take XL Energy's property taxes out of the city of Red Wing to balance the budget. What we're doing is taking local property tax dollars to balance the budget. That's what's wrong about this. We're not doing this anyplace else in the state, and I don't understand why it should be okay to do it in the case of the Iron Range.
Further discussion on the A51, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to acknowledge that we've heard Senator Tomasoni and Senator Bach mention that these are property taxes. And with those words in mind, I would ask if Senator Tomasoni would yield.
Senator Tomasoni will yield. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Tomasoni, if this taconite aid is considered property taxes, would you is this property tax in lieu of these taconite aid payments that are made in lieu of property taxes? Are these included then as part of your LGA determination, which is based upon ability to pay property taxes?
Senator Tomasoni.
Madam President and Senator Nelson, that's another thing you're going to do is you're going to try and take LGA away from us also and make it even worse. The issue with production taxes and LGA is that the mining companies, unlike the Mayo Clinic or unlike IBM, they don't pay any money on referendums. So let me explain to you what happens if the city of Hibbing, the biggest city north of Duluth in all of northern Minnesota, decides to raise its levy 1%. When Hibbing raises its levy 1% because the mining companies don't contribute, Hibbing can raise $39,000. When Edina raises their levy 1%, they can raise $1.5 million. That's what the inequity is all about. And the difference is that when you have seven counties, you have 15 school districts, you have 40 communities and townships that you distribute the money to, the in lieu of property taxes makes this way different than just regular property tax that might be paid by some regular commercial industrial.
Further discussion on the A51, Senator Michelle.
Madam Chair, I ask for a roll call vote on the A51.
Roll call has been requested and roll call has been granted. Further discussion on the A51. Seeing none, the Secretary will take the roll on the A51 amendment. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 27 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 887. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. I have an 822 amendment.
Senator Tomasoni offers the 822 amendment. The secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Tomasoni moves to amend Senate File 887 as follows. Page 6, delete lines 10 through 29 and insert. This is the 822 amendment.
To that amendment, Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Hoffman, if you'd like to share the pain, this is a share the pain amendment. This will allow all 37 Republican Senate districts to contribute to the $45 million in an equal share. And that way, the Doug Johnson Fund doesn't have to pay, and the Doug Johnson Fund shouldn't have to pay. But if you like property taxes for settling the general fund account, then here's an amendment that'll do it for you. And members, I want to point out, Senator Michelle, about the comment that not giving $1. I have in my hand a chart, and I didn't hand this chart out because I didn't have enough in color, but the fact of the matter is that this gives an indication of what the Iron Range has given back to the state of Minnesota. And just in the K-12 Permanent Education Fund, there's $721 million. The vast majority of it, over 90% of it, came off of mining and logging from the Iron Range. The Permanent University Fund has another $355 million in the fund. The vast majority of it came off the Iron Range. The University Range Scholarship has $41 million in it that came off the Iron Range. It was a trust fund that we set up back in the early 90s. 20% of all the incoming freshmen at all four campuses of the University of Minnesota get a $1,000 or a $2,000 Iron Range scholarship as a result of this fund. And the Doug Johnson Fund, which is set aside for the Iron Range specifically, has $122 million in it, and you're trying to steal $45 million of it. Members, the Iron Range has done its part in giving back to the state. These funds total $1.1 billion that are giving back to the state of Minnesota every single year, and there are mining projects that are coming up in the very near future that will be contributing more to these funds and giving more back to the students of our K-12 system, to our permanent university fund system, the funding of endowed chairs at the university, as well as scholarship funds for the University of Minnesota. So members, Minnesota, the Iron Range has done its part and continues to do its part in giving money back to the people of Minnesota. But members, if you like the idea of the Iron Range giving $45 million in its property tax monies to settle the general fund, then this amendment will do exactly what you want to do, and it'll spread it out very, very evenly amongst 37 Republican Senate districts, and you can use your property taxes then to fund the $45 million in this particular bill.
Further discussion on the A22 amendment, Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Tomasoni. Again, I actually look forward to your next amendment because they're getting more and more creative. And this is a little more creative than the amendment you offered in committee. You're spreading it out now. But members, I oppose the A22 and ask for a roll call vote.
Further discussion on the A22. A roll call has been requested. A roll call is granted. The secretary will take the roll on the A22 amendment.
This is stupid. This is absolutely idiotic.
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 19 ayes and 43 nays, the amendment is not adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 887. Senator Metzen.
Madam President, I have the A21 amendment.
Senator Metzen offers the A21 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Metzen moves to amend Senate File 887 as follows. Page 1, delete Article 1 and insert. This is the A21 amendment.
Discussion to the A21 amendment.
Madam
Senator
President,
Metzen.
This substitutes the governor's language for the bill in front of us. You can see on the Michelle handout where the governor's cuts are, and there are a lot of cuts in his budget, but the main purpose of my amendment is to get at this competitive bidding language. Again, I repeat, I think we're elected to make these decisions, and this bill removes that competitive bidding language.
Further discussion on the A21 amendment? Senator Michelle? Oh, excuse me, Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, I rise in support of Senator Metzen trying to fix the problem with the competitive grants. Yes, the legislative auditor had recommended a different way of doing things, but the proposal that Senator Michelle has given us has an unworkable timeline. Sometime between now and July 1st, they're supposed to be, somebody is supposed to make up a process for putting the grants out. That leaves the organizations probably not getting any funds at all for the summer jobs season. And many of the programs work with youth and other hard-to-employ people to get them jobs. I know in Minneapolis we have two programs. One is at the Park Board called Learn to Earn and Team Teenworks. And the youth not only work a four-day week, but they also have classroom instruction on that fifth day where they sharpen their skills on math and reading and writing. They earn some high school credit and can take the basic skills tests as if they are needed. The testing that has been done has shown 100% improvement in basic math and reading skills for the participants. It's a 9-week period, and the kids are 14 to 18 years old. The other program in Minneapolis is a summer youth jobs program that helps leverage a lot of private dollars to make sure that our kids are busy in the summer. I'm afraid that what Senator Michelle has in his bill would make it very hard for the summer jobs to actually be available at all here in this year, and that would be really devastating to a lot of kids who and their families who rely on those small amounts of money that they get in. The other thing that's a problem with this is that the grant criteria really isn't clear enough, and it doesn't really delineate between the program types very well. The youth employment programs are going to compete against the adult retraining programs and against the dislocated worker programs. That I don't know who's going to try to put that criteria together in a way that is fair, but there are a lot of headaches involved in trying to have staff try to put that together in just a few months. I note that in the committee, Senator Cohen had an amendment making it clear that political subdivisions were eligible for this funding, and I just wanted to put that on the record here on the floor as well. because it was not clear and perhaps was even eliminated in the original bill. It would be much better for us if we would go back to the way we have done things before. We have good, talented senators on the jobs committee, and they are very much capable of deciding which organizations and political subdivisions, which training groups should get the state funding. I think that putting it in the hands of someone who has no experience with the groups does everyone a disservice, legislators and the recipients of the grants included. So I hope that you support Senator Metzen's amendment. Otherwise, I think we're going to lose out on a long time before getting this funds out to the people who really are going to rely on it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Harrington.
Madam President, I rise to support Senator Metzen's amendment. In St. Paul, having a lot of experience with summer youth programming, I can tell you that the current language in Senator Michelle's bill would pretty much completely eliminate summer youth work for the city. This program provides dollars that support well in excess of 500 young people in the city, but more than just supporting them in terms of summer youth jobs, what it really does, it will eliminate this year's group of kids from being able to learn about work. This program has developed firefighters for the city of St. Paul, youth workers for the city of St. Paul, rec leaders for the city of St. Paul, folks who are working at public housing. It would be particularly disadvantageous for communities of color, which are the majority of the recipients of this, and it would be particularly disadvantageous for poor people, which make up the vast majority of this. The timeline on this makes it virtually unworkable. School will be out in June. We may be still be here, but I think schools will get out on time. And as a consequence, these kids are hoping to start work as soon as possible. Setting a program that starts up in July 1st, if it was running at warp speed, would still not get money out until August. With schools going back into session at the end of August, I think this just completely eliminates summer work for the cities. It's an important program. It has been supportive of both the city's economy, supportive of young people, and it's also been very supportive of crime reductions. It is part and parcel of our gang reduction program in the city of St. Paul, and so I hope people will support Senator Metzen's amendment.
Further discussion, Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. In respect for the author of the amendment, I do have to question whether or not it's in order. According to Rule 7.5, any amendment that we consider on the Senate floor may be out of order if it will reduce net revenue when compared to the bill as it was reported to the floor of the Senate without a corresponding reduction in net appropriations.
Senator Limmer, I do not have the numbers here, and I'm looking for some additional information regarding the numbers. If Senator Michelle or yourself have those numbers, that Senator Metzen, you have information.
If you look at page 9 of the amendment, the transfers in on subdivision 5. Gets the money from the general fund plus a 10% reduction, so it does balance.
And Senator Metzen, could you repeat that? It took me a second to find page number 9.
Page 9.29 to 9.32. That's the transfer in, and plus the 10% reduction, so it does balance.
Information, Senator.
Madam President, if I could ask Senator Metzen to yield for a question, we might be able to come to this.
Senator Metzen, will you yield for a question? Senator Metzen, will you yield? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Metzen, you made reference that some of the money to account for the balancing of this bill would come from the general fund. But is that part of this bill? Is that recognized in the general fund appropriation that this bill is limited to? What part of the general fund are we talking about, Senator Metzen?
Staff is
Senator Metzen
convinced me that it balances, number one, and that's the question at hand, is if it balances, and it balances. So.
Senator Limmer.
Well, thank you, Madam President. That was my question. Senator Metzen makes reference to a general fund, but in the bill, there's limitations to where this general fund would allocate. And so I believe that it's an overreach. The amendment is an overreach, and it goes beyond the parameters established in the final budget numbers. And despite the explanation, I don't believe it balances.
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, I wondered if Senator Metzen would yield for a little more discussion.
Senator Metzen will yield.
Madam President, so it's my understanding that this is the governor's budget bill for this division, and I know that I think just last week you introduced this as a formal bit of legislation, so it is now before the, it's been referred to the committee that you and I serve on. I'm not sure if it's in order, Senator Metzen. We can continue to debate it today, or we can have a committee hearing on it, which might be more appropriate. You have not requested a committee hearing, as I understand. So I guess we can, depending on the chair's, the president's ruling, if there's a negative vote on the Senate floor, it might be kind of hard to spend much more committee time on the same language. So I'd ask you to just consider that as you move forward.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam President. If I could direct your attention on the amendment to page 9, lines 30 through 32. There is a reference, the Commissioner of Management and Budget shall transfer $54 million in fiscal year 2012 from the general fund. That $54 million does not appear to be balancing itself from another item in the amendment. It's reaching out of the amendment to justify the balance, and that would come from something else other than the limitations established in this bill of $54 million.
Madam Chair, or President,
Senator Metzen.
I'm going to reluctantly pull the amendment at this time with the understanding we'll have a further conversation going forward.
Senator Metzen withdraws the A21 amendment. Further discussion on Senate File 887. Senator Goodwin. Thank you, Madam Chair. Will Senator Mitchell yield?
Senator Michelle will yield for a question.
Thank you. I'd like to know in your jobs and economic development bill how many jobs are created or how many jobs are lost in this bill, including private sector and nonprofit. Senator Michelle.
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Madam President, and thank you, Senator Goodwine. I'm sorry, Senator Goodwin. We had this discussion in Finance Committee, you and I, and I think it's worth a little more discussion here on the Senate floor, so I appreciate the question. I think it's the contention of the Jobs Committee that we need to get away from declaring here in St. Paul that this budget will produce X number of jobs, and this bonding bill will produce X number of jobs, and this amendment will produce this number of jobs. We've got to have a little more humility here in St. Paul. There's a few things we can do to improve the business climate, and that's absolutely what we should be about. So Senator Goodwin, I attach no numbers, positive or negative, to this budget bill. This helps us balance the budget, and that's our job this session.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Michelle, the way I count it, there's at least a couple of thousand jobs lost in your bill, including nonprofit and private sector jobs. It's not just state jobs. So I think we need to be honest about what we're doing here. And I think it's absolutely clear that government can stop jobs, prevent jobs, and create job losses. As I said in finance, we can disagree on whether or not government can create jobs, but I don't think anybody will disagree that government can definitely cut jobs, and that's what you're doing in your bill.
Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Madam President. Will Senator Michelle yield for a question?
Senator Michelle will yield. Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you. Senator Michelle, we had some serious discussion about youth employment and these categories that we have, which are seven categories that are moving into the competitive grants program now. And my question to you is, could you tell us in the meantime, or how does this bill currently support youth employment and youth men training during the process of transitioning? Do we have anything in place as of today that could help us deal with some of the issues that we have around youth unemployment? And how does this bill help the state of Minnesota move in the direction of training more youth and employing more youth?
Senator Michelle.
Thank you, Senator Torres-Ray. So if the question is, a couple thoughts, and I appreciate your advocacy, particularly for the youth employment programs, both Minneapolis and St. Paul, that we heard from in committee with Senator Harrington's bill as well. Members, remember, what we are putting together is a budget which starts the fiscal year July 1. So there's not much we can do prior to July 1. And I would also add that's another important reason for us to get our work done in May so that we can get these things online and that these programs that do look for funding, that do need to look for some certainty in their budgets, they should know what the decisions that we've made as of May. What is in place now? Maybe this will help respond to that question. We have the Job Skills Partnership Board, Senator Torres-Ray, and this board administers five different grant programs already. This is already in place. It awards grants as incentives for a business to work with MNSCU or another higher ed institution, and this is a revolving grant program. So this is not just happening one time a year. So I think the pieces are in place with a little more direction from the legislature, a little more direction from the legislative auditor, as we've suggested here in this legislation, And I absolutely think, and I believe there's specific language in this bill which references youth employment, because that is one of the measurements, one of the benchmarks that we should look for going forward.
Further discussion, Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, really the answer is we do not have funding for youth programs right now. The job skills program is not for 14-year-olds. I suggested during our committee process that we create a category for youth programs and that we look into perhaps having a category on its own that we support directly from here, from the legislature. So I am not so much against the competitive process, but I am against denying opportunities to youth, and that's what we've done with this job, with this bill. We do not have an appropriation, members. We do not have any funding for youth development, for youth employment, for youth training. Ironically, all of these categories are the categories that we chose to create competitive, what we call the competitive grants process. So, members, I think that we need to reflect about our commitment really to youth and priorities. I tried to convince the committee and the chair that maybe we do need to look at an umbrella where we have Minneapolis, St. Paul. Now, I want to make sure that people constantly say to us, well, this is Minneapolis and St. Paul. No, no, members. If you look at the category, these are seven programs, all of the youth programs. It's not just Minneapolis and St. Paul. All of our youth programs will not receive funding. So I want you to reflect about this before you take your vote today.
Further discussion, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President, members. I just want to make a comment. I do oppose this amendment, and for these reasons. Then I'm just going to speak to the... That's right, he did pull it. I'm sorry about that. But I just want to make a couple of things clear. As I was growing up, as I raised my kids, as I've run my own businesses, the one thing I learned is there's nothing wrong with competition. It doesn't make us worse, it makes us better. And there's no reason why any of these grants should be opposed. If we have programs that are working and they can prove they're working, then there's no reason that this should be a problem. I stand in favor of this. I think competition is good. We should bring it into our government. We should bring it into our agencies. We should bring it into our private markets. That's where competition belongs. Competition makes us better. It doesn't make us weaker. It makes us stronger and smarter. Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And there's a lot of talk around here about performance-based budgeting and outcomes and measurements, yet we have a bill before us that you can't even tell us how many jobs are going to be lost in this bill. If we can't do measurements here and outcomes and try to predict outcomes and do performance measurements, then how can we expect that the state agencies will do that? Thank you.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins.
Madam Chair, we just heard some words about how good competition is, and competition is good. The problem is with these grant programs that many of them have been in the base budget, and they know that there is existing funding going forward. And so about February, it seems to me, I started getting emails saying, make sure that youth in your neighborhoods know to go now to apply for these summer jobs. Because the funding has always been there. It's in the base budget. So they could rely on it. They could count on it. They could go forward knowing it was there. This throws a big old wrench in the middle of all of that. Would you like to be the person who calls up all those kids who thought they had jobs this summer and say, oopie, no you don't?
Further discussion, Senator Kielash.
Mr. Chair, will Senator Michelle yield for a question?
Senator Michelle will yield for a question. Senator Kelash.
Madam President, a couple of things going on here that we didn't discuss in the committee, and that one of the big things is the cost to administrate the develop and administrate the grants program. We have a cut to the administration of about 5%, and granted, the governor also asked for that 5%, but he wasn't anticipating having to set up a RFP application review, grant contracts, etc., in order to make these kinds of changes, let alone in the time frame. Now, I've sat on the Minneapolis Workforce Investment Board in the past for 10 years, and we had a similar program. But we started months earlier with the RFP process. When we had an RFP go out, and granted, this is for a dozen agencies applied for it, and it was a competitive grants to how to train folks and hard-to-serve folks to get them into the workforce. But it took months, and then after you develop the RFP, you have to send it out to, number one, for review to make sure the RFP is doing what you expect it to do. And number two, then you have to send it out to any organization that which is to apply for that. And they need to have time to put their application together. That's not something they just pull out of the hat and say, here, we're going to be able to do this. The RFPs have to be specific enough so that we are addressing all the needs of the state, that youth programs are served, that disabled are served, that folks with dislocated workers are served across the state. I know that by reviewing just a dozen for a specific small committee in Minneapolis that had about 12 requests, that it takes days to put just to read and evaluate and score all of these applications, and then you'd have a review with each of the agencies to find out to make sure that they can in fact do what they're claiming they're going to be able to do, if they have the capacity, history, etc. So besides not having money set aside in this bill to help develop the RFPs, review the RFPs, do the grants, do the monitoring, we don't have time, as I see, for these agencies to, not just the agencies, but the folks wishing to compete for these grants, to put together their programs in the best light of it. So the combination of not having funds to develop the program, not having time to make sure that the RFPs are written in according to what the state wants, and not having, and agencies or whoever is interested in trying to apply for these funds, having time to do a substantial application that includes all the things the RFP is going to address, and including having those results predetermined, what's expected by the state, is something that's going to take quite a bit more time than the next couple of months in order to do, in order to get back in time for any money going out at the beginning of July. So could you please address that?
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, I don't suspect this will totally address all of Senator Kelash's issues, but I know he was, one of the things he's concerned about is how will DEED monitor, how will DEED oversee this, and I want to suggest that you look, Senator Kelash, at pages 11 and 12 of the bill, and I'll quote a part of it here. The commissioner may retain up to 5% of the amount appropriated to the department for grants to pass-through entities. This was precisely because, as you talked about, the legislative auditor identified that how we want to be able to monitor and track these. So we do have language specifically addressed to that.
Senator Kelash.
Senator Michelle, you didn't address the issue of developing RFPs. You didn't address the monitoring part. You know, the fault in the auditor's report was more about the administration not, in the last few years, not following up and doing the monitoring they were supposed to do according to the laws that we made here. So my question is, how do you pay for setting up the RFPs? How do you pay for the folks that are going to have to review all of these? It isn't like there's people sitting around the Department of Deed with nothing to do that can do this. So you can't do something for nothing, Senator Michelle. We all know that in this body who's been here for a while. So how are you paying for the RFPs? How are you paying for people to review this? And that 5% is coming out of kids' jobs. It's coming out of dislocated workers' jobs. That's for monitoring. That doesn't count the amount of money it's going to take to set it up. And all of that funding doesn't come on until after July 1st. So you got a combination of a lot of things going here that you're not paying for. So I'm just questioning the fiscal, the ability to for the Department of Deed to fiscally be able to do this with a current number of full-time employees and get it done in a time frame of July 1st.
Senator Michelle.
Madam President, again, Senator Kelash, I'd point to that same section. I think all of your questions fall under administrative costs, and fiscal staff has informed me that if it is Deed's determination that they need to take that up to 5%, that's $275,000. That should be plenty.
Further discussion, Senator Higgins.
Well, Madam Chair, just one last point. We're taking all these grants, we're blocking them out together, and then we're going to chop them. Classic block and chop, and it doesn't do anybody good.
Further discussion on 877, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. I have the A50 amendment.
Senator Bach offers the A50 amendment. Secretary will report.
Senator Bach moves to amend the Senate file 877 as follows. Page 16 after line 20, insert. This is the A50 amendment.
To the A50 amendment, Senator Bach.
Thank you, Madam President. For those of you that are new, this is an issue that's been around the legislature for a long time. I've seen it offered just about every year when the Omnibus Jobs Bill comes to the floor of the Senate, and previously when I served in the House, it was a perennial issue. Members, what this creates is an opportunity for employers who have tipped employees, the opportunity for them to pay the tipped employees less than the state's minimum wage. Current law, Minnesota's minimum wage for large employers is $6.15, small employers $5.25. What this would allow is employers that have tipped employees to be able to pay them 50% of that number, as long as the tips make up the difference and get the total compensation up to the statutory rate in law. And I'd like a roll call vote.
Madam President.
Further discussion on the A50 amendment. Senator Michelle.
I do this reluctantly, Senator Bach, but I Madam President, I want to question the germaneness of this provision. There is nothing in Senate File 887 dealing with Minnesota Statute Section 177.24. I guess if Senator Bach wants to talk about tipped wages and tip credits, let's do that in committee. That would be fine. But, Madam President, that goes far beyond the scope of the budget bill in front of the body today.
Further discussion, Senator Bach?
Well, advice, Madam President. The Department of Labor and Industry is in Statute 177, and this amendment is in Statute 177, and it's the same statute, Madam President, so clearly it's germane to the bill.
Madam President, advice?
Certainly, Mr. Senator Michelle.
Madam President, looking at the permanent rules of the Senate, 35.2, a non-germane amendment includes one that relates to a substantially different subject. Bingo. Senator Bach has offered something that is relating to a substantially different subject. Or, if you're not comfortable with that, Madam Chair, I believe Senator Bach's amendment is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose than that of the original bill. Remember, the original bill, members, is a budget for state agencies, commissioners, and boards. This is a fairly significant policy, and one I would not be surprised we have a debate on later.
Members, I am going to rule the A50 amendment non-germane. I do believe it relates to a substantially different subject and is intended to accomplish a substantially different purpose.
Madam President,
Senator Bach.
I'll withdraw the amendment.
Senator Bach withdraws the A50 amendment. Further discussion? Seeing none, Secretary will give Senate File 887 its third reading.
Senate File Number 887, a bill for an act relating to state government appropriating money for jobs, economic development, and housing. Third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 887. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 36 ayes and 28 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, we will revert to the fifth order of business, reports of committee that is printed on the addendum. Senator Koch.
Madam President, I would move that the committee reports printed in today's addendum be now adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Proceeding to the sixth order of business, also printed on today's Senate agenda addendum. There are several, it's second reading of Senate bills. There are several bills printed on page 3, second reading. Moving on to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest.
Madam President.
Just one moment. Without objection, the following senators will be excused from today's session, Senator Howe and Scheid, all day.
Okay.
Senator Koch.
Madam President, the Majority Caucus will caucus at 1 o'clock. That'll give people a little chance to grab some lunch. We'll be caucusing at 1 o'clock in room 107.
An hour. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. The Senate Finance Committee will meet at 2 o'clock in room 123.
Further announcements of Senate interest, Senator Koch.
Then, Madam President, I would move that we adjourn until Tuesday, March 29th at 10 a.m.
Senator Coakes, we do adjourn until Tuesday, March 29th at 10 a.m. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. We are adjourned.